Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. And you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very good. Very glad that we didn't have the same glitch at the beginning of the program that we had last week. Music,
you know what? I forgot even to worry about that. I was worried about that yesterday, and just now we were talking before it, and I forgot even to worry that that was going to happen. So
I was holding my breath for us. I had my fingers crossed, but it worked, and I did nothing to fix it. It just, I don't know. It was just a complete glitch last week, and we didn't have to repeat it this week. So
and not to jinx it, but the fact that that didn't happen means something else will happen at some point tonight, right? I mean, if
well, you just well, okay, all right. Now
not to I said not to jinx it, which I believe at least removes any legal, liability on my part where jinxes are concerned, and you're an authority on that. So
absolutely. I think we're going to be okay here. I really do.
I'm immune from jinxes. Okay, good. Well, we've got a huge show tonight. We've got a very special guest, and I think why don't we just jump right into it?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let me tell you about our guest. We've got Are You Serious with us? He is the editor-in-chief of the online transhumanist publication H+ Magazine. He's the former editor-in-chief of Mondo 2000, which was a technoculture magazine, legendary back during the 1990s. He's written a number of books, authored or co-authored, including A User's Guide to the New Edge, True Mutations, Counterculture Through the Ages, and Design for Dying, which was co-authored with Timothy Leary. In addition to editing H+ Magazine, he's organizing the Mondo 2000 History Project, which is an open-source memoir. Are you welcome back to Fast Forward Radio?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope maybe I can provide a glitch.
No. Anything the guests do, that's just an improv. That's
right,
we don't consider those glitches.
We try not to be judgmental.
It's a glitch. But
we have a running tradition of Blog Talk Radio, our service provider here. They've been in beta for 3 years now, having some kind of little technical glitch each week. It's always something different. It keeps you guessing, and it makes it a lot of fun. So we've got a lot of stuff we want to get into with you this evening. I wonder if we can start on what might be a question you get asked all the time, but I've never asked it. So I feel like, once again, Stephen, immunity on this, right?
Right.
we were talking about it briefly before the show started. Let's get into the name Are You Serious, if we could. What's the relationship between Are You Serious and Ken Goffman? Is that like a Bruce Wayne Batman thing, or how does that work exactly, and how did you come up with that name?
It's an interesting relationship, actually. I took the pseudonym Are You Serious back in 1984, and for a while I may have totally become Are You Serious, and now I sort of co-occupy my body at varying times and points. The name was, was a youthful indiscretion. I was only 32 years old, which in baby boomer time, you have to have it. So I was really an adolescent at 32. I was enjoying books written by Robert Anton Wilson, a very interesting philosopher, science fiction novelist, and so forth, who wrote about various people who had contact or claimed to have had contact, alien contact with the Dog Star Sirius. Among them, Aleister Crowley and John Lilly and a few other people. And so Are You Serious was basically just sort of a quip, or, you know, I was a quippy, invitation to alien contact, perhaps. I don't know. Whatever it was, it stuck. I became somewhat known under the moniker Are You Serious. So now I like Batman, I'm stuck with it.
Well, it's catchy. It's got that going for it. Now the bit about human civilization being in contact with aliens from Sirius, that's not just science fiction. I mean, it's probably just science fiction, but I mean, that was a there was a book about that, right, back in the 70s, The Sirius Mystery?
Sirius Mystery by Temple. I think his name was Robert also, Robert Temple. Might have been another name. There is something mysterious about it. There's a tribe, ironically, called the Dogon.
The Dogon, worshipping the Dog Star. Now, what's up with that, Stephen?
They seem to have mapped its place in the galaxy without having had the tools of, you know, to... make those kinds of measurements. So I don't know. Woo woo.
It's interesting. I just remember years ago there was a on Nova on PBS. They did a show and they were just ripping what's his face, Eric Von Daniken, to shreds. Okay,
right.
Mr. Chariots
right.
of the Gods.
Right.
And they got to the end of it, and like in the last 5 minutes, they said, "But there's this other book, and this one's a lot harder to disprove." The end. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Well, so enough about life on Sirius. Oh, by the way, while we're still on your name, does SiriusXM, do they have to pay any royalties? Are you getting any taste of that action? Or
no, that was pretty upsetting when they came out with that, actually. I tried to at least get free service, and I couldn't even get that.
Crikey, man. Because I'll tell you, if anybody starts Bowermaster or anything, I'm going to be all over them, okay?
You should.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are a bunch of people using Are You Serious now online, and they're all very irritating.
Well, I think we talked about this last time, and as I recall, you also pointed out that they're all very lame. So
yeah.
Please, folks, accept no substitutes. Okay, we've got the real Are You Serious right here. Let's not mess around. Well, for one thing, if they spell it like E-R-I-O-U-S, that's a dead giveaway. Okay, so. Let's talk a little bit, if we can kind of back up. I want to sort of ease into talking about Humanity Plus and H Plus Magazine and just do a little bit of background, catch our listeners up on your life so far. I want to start out just kind of talking about this sort of nexus of counterculture and transhumanism. And I wonder if you could just sort of give us your quick definition of what counterculture is. I know that it's something you've written extensively about. And it's something that, for good or for ill, you're identified with. So, in your view, what is counterculture?
Well, when Dan Joy and I wrote the book back in the early 2000s, we defined counterculture. We took the line of really paying tribute to those who had identified with counterculture, the common associations people have with counterculture, which was, you know, this line that runs from the Beats to the hippies, through the punks, and then through all the post-punk cultures. Among those would be you would include cyberpunk, and the idea there. Was do-it-yourself with technology. So that's sort of where we were coming from with the book, was trying to identify counterculture or identifying countercultures throughout history as anti-authoritarian, antic, humanist, boundary-defying movements. But, I mean, there's a whole other way of looking at counterculture, which would be anything that is distinct or challenging to the mainstream. So that when we were writing this book, I went on to Google to see what came up first under the word counterculture, and the first thing that came up was a Christian site, a fundamentalist Christian site. And they were considering themselves to be a counterculture at that point in American and human history, as opponents of secularism, abortion, open sexuality, etc., pluralistic culture, and so forth. They viewed themselves as the countercultures. I think that at this point, it's a term that I try to step away from to a large degree, because I think we've entered such a confusion and such a meta log of values, of possible values, and so many distinct and contingent viewpoints that are changing so rapidly that it's very hard to talk about counterculture anymore. I mean, it's hard to locate what an actual mainstream culture is in this country or in the world. So it's hard to have that point of contrast where you can call a movement or a frame of mind or whatever a counterculture. But I do think going back to my point, cyberpunk basically was a do-it-yourself with technology, and I think open source culture, that the citizen scientist culture, all those sorts of things have countercultural implications that go back to Whole Earth Review, which was started by Stuart Brand, who was also involved in the beginnings of computer culture, and it was really about taking tools and creating new resources, creating novelty, and doing it yourself. Really within sort of the hippie era context. And then with punk rock, actually, it really expanded out. I mean, that was very much a do-it-yourself culture. And it became about doing your own media, not just becoming a rock band and selling to the corporate media, but having it be a participatory culture in which everybody creates their own music and distributes it themselves with independent record labels, and people do independent art and independent fashion and all those sorts of things. And that continues on through, that integrates all of that, the sort of hippie counterculture and the punk counterculture integrates into the early computer culture, in which the early hackers were very much baby boom generation, 1960s, 1970s, anti-authoritarian types, who brought that spirit with them, and the idea that you could have a personal computer, that you could make a sort of a thinking machine for distribution to a large group of individuals, rather than just leaving it all in the hands of IBM and so forth. That was really the beginnings of this digitization of culture. And then, I mean, very much in the specific, if you look at the beginnings of transhumanism as sort of a meme within contemporary digital culture, it kind of goes back to the Extropian group or the Extropy group. And when I had the opportunity to interview Max Moore for something else I was doing called Neophiles, and Max Moore was the person who started the Extropy group along with Natasha Vita Moore.
Right.
He said that, if I remember it exactly correctly, I think the first book that really influenced him along the lines of thinking in transhumanist terms was Exopsychology by Timothy Leary. It might have been the first, it might have been the second book, but it was very early on in his development that he tuned into these ideas. And Leary, of course, was talking about space migration, intelligence increase, and life extension, but he was also talking about a very complex systemic concept of human evolution brought on by changes in technology that really moves in sort of very accurate predictive manner, moves from people being connected, sort of the wired era, what he would call stage five, to people getting control over biology, to people getting control over the molecular structure and so forth.
And
so,
I'm sorry, this was Timothy Leary writing this book?
Yeah, this is.
I didn't know he got into this stuff. That's very interesting.
Of course, the terms that were used in the 1970s, and you know the exact expectations as to what the technologies were going to be, what was developing then, it turned out to be different somewhat. But if you really understand the essence of what he was saying, he was talking about these kinds of technological developments actually opening up new areas of the brain, in a sense, and new circuits, new neurological circuits, new intelligence circuits in the human brain.
Very interesting. I'm going to have to bone up on my Timothy Leary. There's a side of him I didn't know about, I guess.
He wrote a series of books in the mid-late 70s called the Future History Series. They are five books. And you have to. There are occult aspects to the books that might turn some people off. But if you can work your way through it, then you get a lot of insight, I think, into not just what he was thinking, but into what some of the potentials are for the human future.
Well, that's interesting because. Definitely, we've talked a lot about the various kind of early glimmers of a lot of the subjects that we talk about now today in H Plus Magazine or right. on this podcast of the Speculist, around this entire community, and there are precursors. But we always think of it. I mean, in our discussions on the show, we've always talked about it kind of starting with K. Eric Drexler and Engines of Creation, but
there was right around the same time that Leary was talking about this stuff. F.M. Esfandiari, who is generally is more frequently acknowledged publicly as one of the early 1970s influences, was writing a series of books. I think one of them was called Telespheres, and he took on all of the various transhumanist tropes in his books as well. And then, of course, Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw, the advocates of, nutritional life enhancement and life extension and so forth, were very much in circulation in the 70s. And there was a space migration movement going on also that had somewhat of a counterculture flavor to it. And in some ways it was very similar to the transhumanist or Humanity Plus movement now, in the sense that, it had... it's sort of counterculture elements, but it also was very pluralistic and had all kinds of other cultural influences as well. I think, it's very important for me to separate the fact that I have these influences from what I'm doing with H Plus magazine, because really what I am is I'm a conduit for a community or a fairly large, really diverse group of people with a lot of different ideas, thoughts, sensibilities, politics, and so forth. So I have to be pretty cautious about not putting a counterculture spin on H+, by not excluding it, because there are those elements, but also including other elements as well.
Not making it a vehicle for that necessarily, I guess.
Right, right. As I said, I have to be a conduit for many visions from coming from many different points of view.
Fascinating what you were saying, though, about how counterculture and then later punk culture brought in kind of the do-it-yourself ethic or whatever. It's something we celebrate all the time here, you know, the fact that technology is allowing more and more people to do more and more things. We can contribute. Pretty much if you have an idea, you can get it out there and you can discuss it with all kinds of with interesting people from all over the place, and that's just something that was not possible even just a few years ago. So,
yeah. I mean, I think the moment you bring open source science to people, the moment you talk about the citizen scientist as a theme and so forth, you really provoke a lot of enthusiasm. I really think that's where the pulse is right now, and that's where it's going. And I sort of see it as the emergent property of the human future, of transparency and collaboration, voluntary collaborationalism. I think, is the emergent way of doing stuff, of getting stuff done in the future. And I think that's why it provokes really strong enthusiasm today.
Well, certainly people seem willing to voluntarily collaborate for things that they think are fun, right?
That's right. Yeah.
When it comes to recreation, when it comes to games and that sort of thing, and the great thing about hacker culture, and I guess that that leads to maker culture. We had Cory Doctorow on a while back talking about his book Makers, and we've talked extensively about that. You have this idea of people who do this stuff because they love it, right? I mean, if you've been around real hackers, I mean, they become completely consumed often with what it is they're doing. But the enthusiasm level is higher than what you'll see for virtually anything else. I think it becomes a real driver. And a real motivating force. Now, let's talk a little bit about H+ magazine, since you brought it up. What's the relationship between H+ the magazine and Humanity+ the organization?
Well, Humanity+ is now the publisher of H+ magazine. The magazine actually started with Humanity+. Actually, it was the when James Clement, who was at that time the chairman of World Transhumanist Association, approached me at a Singularity conference several years ago about the idea of doing an online magazine in the format that you will find if you go to the site and look at back issues, this sort of flipbook format where you can click and turn the pages, and then you can click again to make the page large enough to read and so forth. So he approached me, it was actually the World Transhumanist Association, and then as I was working on the first issue, it turned into Humanity+, and Humanity+ really was behind the first edition of H+ as a magazine. And at that time, we weren't publishing articles regularly on a website. We were just issuing an online magazine. And at some point, Humanity+ decided that they didn't want to invest their money in the magazine anymore. And a bunch of other things happened that I guess were sort of political and that I won't go into. But James Clement and some other people formed another company, I'm not going to get his name right, so I'm not going to try. They formed a company called Better Humans, and they became the publisher of H+ magazine. And they just did an incredible job of collaborating with me and with the writers and with the artists and so forth in creating this incredibly dynamic, very lively site, very busy site. Running quite a lot of content between the magazine and more or less daily content on the web. And at some point, they decided that they needed to marshal their funds for other projects, and they turned it back over to Humanity Plus. So here we are again. And I think this is going to be a very interesting process because I think this is going to be very much a grassroots effort. Really building, in some sense, we're building this from the bottom up. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do is really create a community around this magazine and really have it be an example of this sort of emergence in which people voluntarily collaborate to make something happen. And it's a process. I mean, it's, you know, on the one hand, I've got to make sure that there's articles there, you know, on a daily basis or a near daily basis. So, you know, I just spent the entire day editing text, which is why it's difficult for me to speak right now, actually. If you ever spent a day editing text, it's very funny to start using your voice all of a sudden. You know, we're beginning the process of really trying to form a community around this publication. And, you know, really sort of breaking it down in terms of what the site does now into something very simple, which sort of looks pretty much like a blog at this point with serial posts and with archives of articles and past magazines, and then building it back up again from there. So it's really a pretty great process. It's interesting.
Well, it's really interesting to hear the story of kind of coming full circle from Humanity Plus, the organization, to Better Humans, and then back again. And I've actually done some blogging over on Better Humans. And so, do they're carrying on doing their own thing now, or is
I know that they're doing some other stuff. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
Well, so it just, you know, more diversity of channels for this kind of stuff. So all the best, of course, to the Better Humans folks as well. Let's get into the name just a bit, since that's our theme, one of our themes here this evening, talking about why things are named what they're named. I think we've covered this on this program before, but talk a little bit about how the organization Humanity Plus came to be called that and how the magazine got that name.
You know, I mean, in terms of the decision to change from the World Transhumanist Association to Humanity Plus, I wasn't really involved in that. So it's very difficult for me to talk about it. In fact, I find it, I have to be honest, hard to understand some of the dynamics involved in some of these changes. But, I mean, I do know that the emphasis, they wanted an emphasis on humanism. Although I suppose humanity or human does exist in both those words, but I guess they wanted to get the human out in front in terms of a name, and really make it clear that it's about enhanced humans, and I guess. Trans might have more of an ambiguous sound to it. But again, I'm not the best person to speak to that transition.
And so the name for the magazine was just reflecting off the name of the organization then?
Exactly, yeah, the name. Well, H Plus, I mean, it has a nice name to it. You know,
yeah.
It has a nice sound to it. You know, it could be anything, actually. But it does have a good
That's
sound.
True. It could be some kind of modified hydrogen atom, really.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah. It could be a fashion magazine. You know, you can go without looking at it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I would have to, not for us to go off on a tangent here or anything, but I would have to agree that I never had a big issue with the name World Transhumanist Association. And I like the word transhumanist just because, transhumanism, because it gives me a label I can stick on myself. I am a
right.
transhumanist, you know. What you know, in Humanity Plus, I am a human plus, right? It just, you know, it's a little bit hard of a glass. I like the name. Not to say I don't like it, but I never had a problem with the word transhumanism, and why we use it all the time around here, actually.
The word clearly has a lot of staying power. You see increased disbursement of that term all over the web and so forth. And you see, it's really become a term of, increasingly become a term of debate and discussion and misinterpretation, and it's very dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you want to get me started, how about singularitarian? Okay, that one is
just, right.
I'm going to be talking about that.
That's Ray
that
Kurzweil's word there.
Yeah.
But I mean, the singularity, in some sense, has even taken over as a meme. Has become a more powerful symbol. A more powerful signifier than transhumanism. You find people using the singularity, in some sense, as a word that's interchangeable with transhumanism.
Yeah, I think that the assumption today, correctly or incorrectly, is that if someone is a transhumanist, then they are that individual is going to be interested in the singularity. They're going to be proponents of the singularity. That wouldn't necessarily have been the case a few years ago, and it's still not even necessarily the case today. But the two have become not associated to the point of identification, I would say, that almost synonymous at this point.
One of the fun things I find, in the process of doing the magazine is that the magazine has had some success in getting out into the world and sort of being read and viewed by people who don't immediately associate themselves with transhumanist culture. And I think that it shows that there's just an incredible amount of diversity and an incredible amount of argumentation and, a lot of, a lot of variation within, under the umbrella of transhumanism or Humanity Plus. It's very far from being a cult.
Well, and this kind of brings us back around to the issue of counterculture versus mainstream culture. One of the things that that I've written about and that we've talked about a number of times here is the mainstreaming of some of these ideas. I did a blog post about a year ago where I took I had a quote from he's the CTO of Intel, I think. The CTO of Intel, a quote from Stephen Hawking, and a quote from Ray Kurzweil. So you've got like the supposedly, mainstream business guy. Granted, he's in technology, but, this has got to be a pretty level-headed guy to hold down a position like CTO at a company like Intel. Then you've got arguably the most respected scientist in the world. And then you've got Ray Kurzweil, this leading voice in, this kook movement, right, as some people might look at it. And of the three of them, they were all talking about the same thing, how much change is going to occur in the next century, how big the next century is going to be. And of the three of them, Kurzweil actually gave the most conservative estimate. And, it's like you look at that and you say, this stuff is filtering its way into the greater consciousness, that these ideas are becoming a lot more, if not accepted, at least a lot more familiar, that people are hearing more about them. Now, does that mean that they're more receptive to them, or does that actually, in your experience, is that actually raising the resistance to some of these ideas?
Well, I think it's both. But, I think it's not just that the ideas are out there, but it's that the technologies are actually out there. And, this brings us, in some sense, to Mondo 2000, when we were doing that magazine in the early 1990s. Quiet. There's a cat screaming in the background. When we were doing the magazine in the early 1990s, we dealt with a lot of transhumanist issues, and we dealt with implants, and we dealt with ideas around AI and biotechnology and nanotechnology. And to a great extent, there wasn't a lot technically to report on, and that was very far out. You know, visions and conjecture and so forth. And you know, when it comes around to doing Humanity Plus in the later part of the 2000s of the zeros, you actually are able, almost like day to day, to find extraordinary things going on in biotech and nanotech. You know, robotics, implants. I mean, I think the last time I was on the show, we were talking about enhancements, and I was saying that if something came along that could, for instance, cure blindness, then that would be a change that would sort of wake everybody up and make people go, wow, something is really happening here. And, you know, since that's happened, there have been a number of reports, both in terms of a mechanistic fix for blindness and in terms of a stem cell fix for blindness, where, you know, experiments were performed and at least a nominal eyesight was brought to people without any vision. So that seems to me to be one of the reasons why people are talking about this, is that this stuff is actually happening. And I mean, we still have this seemingly huge chasm between discovery and proving safety and distribution. And proving safety is sort of in this weird middle zone where it's very arguable what that is. But I mean, William Gibson famously said, "The future is here; it just hasn't been distributed yet." And we ran a piece right at the beginning of the new H plus 2.0 about 12 different sort of miraculous things that have been done with stem cells over the last year or so. And you know, one of them being restoring some degree of eyesight to a blind person. I don't suppose that would be restoring, actually. But anyway, you know, you see these things come along, and there's so much of it coming up right now. And but it's very hard to get it distributed. I think we're in a place where we're getting so much signal that it's almost hard for us to focus on getting the really important things moving into the market and into the culture and, you know, in a way where it gets distributed.
You know, it's hard to register the significance when there are so many things happening at once, and when literally once a week or so, if you follow the Kurzweil feed or you read one of the one of the blogs that cover these kinds of things, Brian Wong or Randall Parker or one of those, you know, hardly a week goes by when you don't see some major potential medical breakthrough. You know, they're going to yet another attack on cancer, or this looks like it might completely wind diabetes down altogether. I mean, you know, there was a time when those kinds of conditions, not that long ago, those kinds of conditions were considered fixed, permanent problems of the, you know, curses of the human species that we just had to deal with. And we see them being, you know, significantly chiseled away at on a daily basis. And I think the fact that there's so much of that going on, the significance of it is hard to, it's hard to maintain. I was talking to my dad actually about this the other night. We got to talking about that it was a big deal when Pluto was discovered. That was right around the time my father was born. He didn't remember it happening, but that was a big deal. There was a new planet discovered. Now we've demoted it. It's not even a planet anymore. But there was talk for years and years after that. Is there a 10th planet? Will we ever find a 10th planet? You know, is it possible there might be, you know, yet one more planet? And last week, was it last week, Stephen, 2 weeks ago, you linked to a TED Talk where one of the scientists running the Kepler probe talks about how they found 140 new Earth-like exoplanets. You know, that's not all the planets they've found. They've found thousands of planets out there, but 140 Earth-like planets. planets, right?
Earth-like, and, yeah. Small, rocky planets, that's right.
Yeah. You know, planets potentially like Earth. You know, just finding one planet was huge news, 80 years ago. Now 140 get found, and if people like us aren't talking about it, it hardly even seems to be discussed. So how do you
well,
sift
artificial
through?
Life, Phil. I mean, you,
well, there
you
go.
Go ahead. Artificial life is a perfect example of that. It's you know, a huge thing, and it just happened this about a month or two ago, and people hardly even talk about it. So
yeah, they created life in the lab. You would think that would be an astoundingly huge news story. But
hey, we have an article on the site right now. Actually, the top article on the site is called AI Superflies and the Path to Immortality. Hello?
Sorry. Go ahead.
By Ben Goertzel, and he points out that in terms of what's happening in the biological sciences, that there could have an effect on aging the possibility of curing the diseases related to aging, we don't have the neurological tools to grasp what's going on in its entirety as a pattern, the way that we can grasp, say, a simpler map, or we can grasp what we see out our window, or whatever we're able to wrap our heads around, sort of literally, in a neurological sense, and that we may need AIs that can actually grasp broader patterns in order to really see how all these things fit together. At the same time, I think in neurology, what they found out is that when you're having important insights and really very clear thoughts and so forth, that there is less neurological activity in your brain. That may be a problem that we're having right now in terms of having too many signals firing at once.
It's hard to see the important ones when they all seem so huge. And when they all seem huge, I don't know, is there a level of just plain indifference that people have developed to that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people develop an indifference to it, but I also think that's where this sort of emergent property of participation might help. You know, that theoretically we're more intelligent as a group than we are as individuals. We can only hold so much data be involved in so many processes as individuals. You know, individually we're kind of dumb in some ways, and as a group we can be kind of smart in some ways. I mean, I also think the opposite is true in other ways, but in terms of resolving some of these problems and issues, and I think in terms of what Humanity Plus is trying to do, this is why it's worthwhile to get people to participate, you know, even if they're not specifically scientists and experimenters in this process of developing a culture and developing a discourse about all these technologies, is to help to push these things towards completion and to bring the important ones to the fore. It almost creates an organic democratic process if you get enough people involved in dialogue and discourse. What people need and what their desires are going to become that much more clear, and hopefully as a result of that, some of these evolutions and developments will you know, emerge more quickly, and will get the focus that they need, as well as just, you know, getting people to donate and participate to the many projects that are, you know, that are being done, that are going on, both independently, on a small scale at the garage level as well as at the commercial level.
Well, you've mentioned the idea of the citizen scientist a couple of times, and I know that one of the most recent, if not the most recent, Humanity Plus conferences was specifically on that topic. And I saw that in a recent message that you sent to the H Plus contributors, you talked about how there's a need for more nuts and bolts coverage of scientific research and technological development and that sort of thing. So is H Plus trying to avoid a niche there? You don't want to become like the, quote, lifestyle futurist or the philosophical futurist? Or is it just that you want to balance that with more of the technological scientific stuff?
Well, I think with the early version of H+, 1.0, if you will, we had a pretty good balance of sort of hard tech, hard science reportage. We had in terms of the website, we had a couple of articles a week that were pretty straightforward. And then we also had culture, we had theory, humor, just about everything you could think of. I'm really just trying to coax as much out of the group of volunteers, the list that you're part of, as I can, and try to bring in some people who will be able to focus on hard tech and hard science items that, as we've been discussing, seem to come up almost on a daily basis. Stuff with extraordinary implications. I really just want to have a balance there. I don't want to abandon culture and so forth. I mean, most people, left to their own devices, they want to theorize and they want to comment.
Yeah, everybody can offer a philosophical overview of
right.
what's happening. I guess the seemingly more yeoman work of talking about what's happening on the ground maybe gets overlooked because
the hard work is in the scientific and technological reportage for sure.
Okay, so if there are folks listening who want to get involved with H Plus, and I'm sure there are, what would you advise them? What kinds of roles can people fulfill, and what's your greatest need at this time?
They should contact me at RU at H Plus Magazine, spelled out HPLUSMAGAZINE.com. We need focused technological and scientific reporting, as you just said. We have quite a few volunteers, so right now. Really, it's a matter of the process of organizing. Volunteers that we already have, people with skills who have actually worked in publishing and journalism and so forth, that's always welcome. Design, we can certainly use some help in design.
Okay, so we'll be sure and include that email address in the show notes as well. Stephen, other questions for our guest or anything from the chat room? We've kind of been neglecting our chatters this evening.
Yeah, we have. The prospect of 6 billion scientists, I think, has kind of blown the minds of some of the group in the chat room. I think that's a big part of what we're talking about is that as the world gets smaller because of communication and everybody's able to talk to everybody else. I mean, that's kind of what you get. You get the rise of the citizen scientist, which is, that's a big, big part of this.
Here's a question from Sally. This is an interesting one. And now I've lost it as it scrolled. Do you think we'll need brain augments to really get the approach to the singularity, let alone the singularity itself? What's your take? Are we going to have to boost our brains to move forward, or is the collective enterprise of the collective intelligence you were talking about a better vehicle for that?
I think we probably do need to try to find ways to increase intelligence, you know, not just in terms of being able to take in information, but in terms of pattern recognition, and in terms of being able to think both rationally and intuitively at the same time about what to do with the information and with the patterns that we have. I think it's a very complicated area. I think while on the one hand, you know, having a great number of participants who might be pretty dumb individually, but might be able to, you know, keep a pretty good eye on things collectively, can be helpful. I certainly think that intelligence increase and better use of the brain is, you know, one of the most important paths towards a useful transhumanist future. I particularly like the idea of a neurological revolution. I think we talked about that on the last show. I think in some sense, if you look at the paradigm that we've used largely on H+, it's been NBIC, nanotech, biotech, information and cognition, cognitive science. I think the cognition, improved cognition for human beings is, on the one hand, the simplest and the most complicated of all those things. Because on the one hand, you have, for instance, pretty good drugs that can do some of these things pretty well temporarily. You can sort of heighten your ability to get the material that's sort of lodging in your brain that you can't get a hold of under ordinary circumstances, to take in more information, to read, study, think more intensely. You can do those things with stimulants. But those drugs also have a lot of problems, and there's downside to it. You can get great pattern recognition from psychedelic drugs, but there's a taboo against learning how to use them scientifically and intelligently. And on the one hand, you get pattern recognition, and on the other hand, you get pattern distortion, particularly if they're not used intelligently and, you know, with some guidance. There are some things out there that we already have available to use as intelligence increase agents, but they're also very, very rough and very raw, presumably when we can get targeted chemicals, neuroceuticals, better designed chemicals, and we can begin to get implants and so forth, and then possibly eventually begin to take intelligent machines inside us, then that's the long-term direction that the intelligence increase will go in. But
if you can achieve molecular precision, or just greater precision, I guess, than we currently have, and be more targeted than what we currently do, you know, it might come via, you know, more or less traditional chemistry initially, or it might come via biotech, or ultimately, you might have nanobots going in and giving you just that boost of pattern recognition without the added pattern distortion. Although I'm thinking even pattern distortion might have some interesting applications in terms of for artists, in terms of creativity and that kind of thing. But
it's absolutely necessary for art. But
to get either of those two things without sitting in a corner and giggling for 3.5 hours, right? I mean, that's the real trick, right? The precision that the capabilities that we're working on now can bring about. I mean, my big enhancement drug is caffeine. It's hardly an enhancement drug, though. I kind of need it the way I need oxygen, pretty much at this point in my life.
Right.
But I think about whatever the simple tweaks that are taking place physiologically, and it could just be psychological at this point. I might drink decaf and get some of the same benefits. But But to be able to you know, flip those switches without flipping the ones that are, you know, maybe raising my blood pressure or maybe giving me some kind of digestive issues or something like that, that's ultimately the end game for these kinds of things, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's pretty difficult. I mean, I there is probably some connection between the high blood pressure and the feeling of being stimulated that's not going to be that easily resolved. But I think it is resolvable ultimately, and yeah, that's where it's headed.
Very cool. Stephen, anything else?
I think that's about it, Phil. We're getting towards the end of the program here.
Well, I know we want to get our music in. We've been depriving our chatters of the musical program, the musical segment of the program. So we're gonna make sure we finish in time for that. Well, are you any parting comments?
Well, no. I mean, come visit HPlusMagazine.com, and also yeah, check out the Mondo 2000. Open source history project on Kickstarter. I guess just Google it, because that's a whole other story, and maybe we'll talk about that sometime.
You know, I had that on the list. We'll have to pick that up next time around. There will be links both to that and to H Plus Magazine, as well as RU's email address for those who are interested in becoming more involved. Well, all the best of success to you with the reboot of H Plus Magazine, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Okay, thanks a lot, Phil.
Thanks for being on the program.
Okay,
Stephen, before we get into the music, just a show note real fast. We will not be on next Wednesday night. We're having a special program coming up Saturday night. It will be at 11 o'clock, midnight Eastern time. Is that right?
That's right. Midnight Eastern, 11 Central.
Yeah.
10 Mountain, 9 Pacific.
Oh,
so, and the reason we're late on Saturday night is we're going to
we're coming at you from the summit. So I will have been live blogging during the day, and the prior evening and during the day I'll be doing audio interviews. I just need a little bit of time to get those synced up. So we'll have a show with you with some voices from the Singularity Summit on Saturday night. So tune in at a special time, or you know, if that's running a little too late for you, you can. You can always pick it up on the recording. So what have we got going on music-wise this evening, Stephen?
The song is Hanging On by Valley Lodge.
All right. Hanging On by, is it Valley Lodge?
That's it.
All right. Well, thanks for putting that together, Stephen, and for your contributions to the program. Thanks once again to our very special guest, Are You Serious? And for everyone listening, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back with you again Saturday evening. And until then, live to see it.